first, our next guest has a lot to say about leaders and leadership. Mostly, our leaders are bad at being leaders in the corporate world, and also that most leaders are men.
How long until you actually get this presentation ready?
Why don't you honestly, do the presentation?
Because
I mean,
I don't want,
you know how to do
what
it.
What I really want, honestly, Michael, is for you to know it so that you can communicate it to the people here, to your clients, to whomever.
Okay.
What?
It's whoever, not whomever.
It's whomever.
No, whomever is never actually right.
Well, sometimes it's right.
Leadership in action on The Office. Is there really a link between being male and being a bad leader? Psychologist Tomas Chamorro Permusic tackles that question in his new book. It's called Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders and How to Fix It? Tomas is the chief talent scientist at the Manpower Group staffing firm and a professor of business psychology at University College London and at Columbia University. Tomas, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, do we have, before we get to the men part of this, do we have a problem with leadership? Do we have a lot of bad leadership in our business world?
Yes, we certainly do. And what's frustrating is that the science of leadership is very well established. For about 3 or 4 decades, we've had a lot of research on what makes an effective leader, what are the assessments or the tools that predict whether somebody will be performing well as a leader. And yet, in most organizations, including for-profit corporations, we still play it by ear. We focus too much on the performances that people display in a job interview or in short-term interactions. And therefore, we end up with many individuals who succeed in their careers without really adding much to their organizations. So if you ask anybody who works anywhere in the world whether the majority of the bosses in that place are competent, they'll probably look at you and laugh.
And we'll get to some of that performance. We're going to spend a lot of time on that. But let's talk about the numbers now when it comes to who the leaders are in our business world. How disproportionately male is our leadership?
So it tends to vary depending on the level of seniority of those leaders. If you look at first-line supervisors or mid-level managers, in places like the U.S., it's not 50-50, but around 60-40 favoring men. But once you get to the top in executive kind of roles, it's about 90% or 95% male. So historically, when we look at the overrepresentation of men in leadership, we automatically assume that that's a sign that men have more potential for leadership, but that would only be true if most leaders would perform well. In fact, if you look at the data from around the world showing that the majority of people dislike their jobs because of their direct line manager, that people quit not their jobs but their bosses, and sometimes traditional employment altogether to decide to work for themselves or become entrepreneurs because they have been traumatized by their managers, then it is pretty clear that there is a lot of room for improvement, and the majority of leaders are not really delivering the results we would like them to deliver.
You mentioned how men can look good in a performative way. A big point in your book is it isn't just so much men and women as traits that we view as good leadership traits that are more associated with men. And I want to spend some time on a couple of those. One of those is confidence. If somebody comes across, if a man in particular comes across as confident in an interview, we look at that and say, aha, this confidence is the sign of a good leader. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, in America, it almost seems crazy or heretic to say that confidence might not be advantageous. So I need to clarify this and what the research actually shows. It's advantageous for the individual to display confidence because they will come across as competent even when they are not. There is a reason why con artists and confidence have the same root. If we are preaching or worshiping confidence or any strategy or tactic for deceiving others, then that might help the individual advance their career, but we're going to end up with a lot of charlatans in charge. And one of the interesting paradoxes that we found in our research is that people who are deluded or deceived themselves, so if you think that you're better than you actually are and you are overconfident and overly arrogant or hubristic, you might actually have an advantage when it comes to tricking others, because there is no way to lie to others, no better way to lie to others than lying to yourself first. So it isn't so much that we actually prefer to have men in charge, but the qualities that we assume as beneficial for leadership are inherently more masculine than feminine, and confidence is one of them, because in any area of performance or competence, men think that they're better than they actually are, and women tend to think that they're not as good as they actually are.
But people might be listening and thinking, hey, confidence in and of itself is a virtue. A person who's more confident is going to be a better leader. You break down the research on that. Is confidence a predictor of good leadership?
Exactly. And the answer is no. And I think it's helpful if people apply the same logic they apply to other jobs. For example, if you're going to the dentist to have a root canal, what's more important to you, that the dentist is confident or that they are actually competent? If you're taking a flight to go somewhere, what would you rather have? A pilot who is competent or one that is confident, maybe even overconfident? What's interesting is that in any area of competence, there is actually a very slim, very small relationship between confidence, how good people think they are, and competence, how good they actually are. So more often than not, we have to choose between one or the other, and we tend to choose confidence because that's the easiest one to observe. But that's how we often end up with people who are not as good as we think they are and who actually end up not delivering once they get to the top.
Talking to psychologist Tomas Chamorro-Premusic. His new book is called Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders and How to Fix It. One little asterisk here about confidence, Tomas. You cite some research that suggests that, okay, if I'm a man in a job interview and I come off really confident, that's going to make the reviewers think more highly of me. What happens if I'm a woman who comes off as really confident in that interview?
We use different standards. So this is what we call the double blind effect. So, you know, it is in essence a lose-lose situation for women. When they don't display the same arrogance or overconfidence that most males, certainly male managers, display, we point the finger at them and said, oh, you know, they just don't want to be leaders. They're not leaning in. They have no ambition. But then when they do, we are intimidated by them. And we're scared that they seem like kind of kick-ass bulldozers or something. So we complain when women don't seem as assertive as men. And when they do, we are afraid of them, or we don't like it because they don't behave in a traditionally feminine aspect or way.
All right, that's confidence. Let's go to charisma, another one of those traits that we think makes a good leader. We want a charismatic leader who's going to inspire us. We tend to see men as more charismatic. What's the reality when it comes to charisma and leadership?
So charisma is slightly different because it's neither good nor bad per se. It's an amplifier. So if you take a leader who has, a lot of integrity, who is competent, who has technical expertise and knows what's right for their organization or their country, charisma will be a big asset. It would help that leader influence and persuade others to follow them. But what happens when the leader is incompetent, or when the leader lacks integrity, or when they have the wrong goals or objectives? In that circumstance, charisma will be incredibly toxic. This might sound like an over-the-top or exaggerated analogy, but if we think about the most brutal dictators in human history, people like Lenin, Stalin, or Mao, or Hitler, for sure they would have caused a lot less damage to the world if they had not been charismatic. So charisma is a very important tool to influence and persuade others. But when leaders lack competence or integrity, it's really destructive and detrimental. And it's important to say that we, again, focus more on charisma than we should. Take American presidential elections. I think after height, the number one predictor of who wins a nomination for the presidency and the presidential election is who would you rather have a beer with. We know that the impressions that candidates make in short-term televised debates are hugely significant, driving or persuading swing voters whether they should vote for one person or another. And in reality, that doesn't say anything about the candidate's actual competence, their ability to do the right thing when they're in the job.
We're talking to Tomas Chamorro per Music. He's chief talent scientist at Manpower Group, professor of business psychology at University College London and Columbia University, talking about his new book, Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders and How to Fix It? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen people without the appropriate skill set rise through management, maybe where you work? Is this your boss we're talking about? Do you see this happening for men more than it does for women? Do you see confidence and charisma as being important for leaders, or do you think there are other qualities that make someone a good leader in the workplace or anywhere? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Business psychology professor Tomas Chamorro per Music is with us. We're talking about his new book, Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders and How to Fix It? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you part of a management team? Have you hired leaders and managers? What skills and traits do you look for? What do you think about things like displaying confidence or charisma in that job interview? What makes a good leader? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tomas, we've talked about confidence and charisma. You say not good predictors of leadership. They're things we tend to look for in our leaders. Men, they're associated with men more. If not those, what should we be looking for in a leader?
So what we should be looking for is first competence, which breaks down into technical expertise or, you know, subject matter expertise. And then the second one is general learning ability or learnability. And what we find today is that in a world where the landscapes of jobs keeps changing and future jobs are perhaps hard to predict, what matters is not so much what you already know as a leader, but what you are willing and able to learn in the future. So that's the first ingredient, competence. Secondly, people skills, which is about managing yourself and managing others. And then humility, integrity, and coachability. Coachability is really important because no matter how good a leader already is, they will need to get better. And the leaders that have the highest potential to develop, improve, and get better in the future, they show a lot of self-criticism, they show a lot of humility, and they even have a healthy degree of insecurity where they don't believe their own hype. I was speaking to a journalist last week who asked me, but who wants to follow a leader who says, I don't know? And my answer was, well, any rational person, because most of the important problems in life, you probably don't know the answer. You need to work them out. So if our criterion for deciding whether to follow somebody is that the person says, I know this for sure, when they don't, we're going to end up being in trouble.
How do we make the switch from these superficial qualities like confidence and charisma that don't apparently affect our leadership to the things, the humility, the willingness to learn that you were just talking about? This would be a big change, I think, for a lot of workplaces.
There's no, you know, silver bullet here or no simple solution, but there are three things that we should be working on. The first is to actually develop our own competence, because it takes competence to spot incompetence. Think about any other area of performance, music, the arts, movies, food, wine, whatever your hobby, favorite hobbies are. And to determine whether somebody is good at that or not, you need to develop expertise in that field as well, so that in essence you can distinguish between somebody who is a charlatan and somebody who is actually very good at that. Secondly, we need to distrust our instincts. We need to understand that our intuition may have been effective 100,000 years ago when we lived in pretty simple times and spent all of our lives with the same five or six people, but today we can no longer look at someone and decide whether they're a good leader or not, because leadership is a function of things that cannot be directly observed: strategic thinking, curiosity, critical thinking, and intelligence. And finally, we need to actually focus on the right qualities. If we're really good at evaluating the wrong things, then we won't get very far. So instead of focusing on confidence, charisma, and even narcissism, which often gets people to the top, we should focus on competence, humility, and integrity.
We are talking to Tomas Chamorro per Music. His new book is called Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders and How to Fix It? Tomas, a lot of advice, I think, for women in the business world and in leadership is to be more like men, to emulate some of the qualities we've been talking about, that, as you mentioned, leaning in, the confidence, the charisma. What do you think would be a better approach when we're talking to women who are trying to break through some of this?
Yeah, and so, you know, this is a complex issue because I do understand why we see that advice being given so often. And, you know, to be sure, if I'm trying to help a woman today in a world where you only get noticed when you blow your own trumpet and advertise your own achievements and even take credit for other people's achievements and blame others for your mistakes, I'll probably engage or indulge in the same kind of strategies, Machiavellian tactics to help that woman stand out in a system that is invariably rigged. However, I think morally there is not that much to gain from such advice. Instead of pointing the finger at women and say, hey, why don't you behave more like men and even like incompetent men, how about we point the finger at ourselves or look at ourselves in the mirror and get better at actually evaluating talent, competence, or potential? So in a sense, if we do that, we'll end up asking men to behave more like women, being more caring, more kind, more empathetic, and capable of a healthy degree of self-doubt as opposed to believing their own hype and succeeding because they're very arrogant or overconfident. That's good for everyone. Whereas if we think that the solution to our leadership problems is to get women to behave more like incompetent men, we might help those women, but at everybody else's detriment.
Let's bring on a caller now. Joshua is with us in Milwaukee. Joshua, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Joshua?
You know, one of the things that we're trying to move to in my organization, especially in the division that I lead up, is giving more performance-based evaluation, so actually asking people to solve problems or to make proposals as part of that promotional application process. And then, you know, as a tool to kind of weed out some of that bias that we get from, you know, just the feeling that we get from talking to a person in a job interview to actually saying, can you complete some of the tasks that are required of the actual job?
Interesting, Joshua. Thanks a lot for that call. So, Tomas, somewhat more objective ways to measure than just getting that good feeling from somebody in the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any attempt to look for objective, performance-based KPIs, key performance indicators, will be a step in the right direction. Even things like upward feedback. So if you have managed a team, what your direct reports think of you, their views of you are a really strong predictor of your ability to lead in the future. And, you know, we are what we repeatedly do, and our reputation can mostly be crowdsourced if we ask the people who see us day after day to report on our behaviors. For instance, one of the best ways to predict whether a manager will behave in an ethical or unethical way is to ask the people that work for that person, do you think your manager is honest? Do you trust your boss?
Thanks a lot for the call, Joshua. We heard on Facebook from Brandy, who says, my professor worked at an insurance company. She says she worked for them, and they offered male salespeople base pay, but not women. She discovered it when women were constantly leaving. She left, too. So what about, I mean, there's still, in that story and others we heard on Facebook, just overt discrimination against women on the workplace, not even just this subtle, you know, psychological misreading of people.
Yes. And, you know, even though my book doesn't focus on that, I acknowledge that that is the case. You know, you have sexism, there is a glass ceiling, there is overt discrimination. All of these things, I think, we have been aware of for some time, and via laws and regulations, they can be undermined or at least tackled. But the issue that I think has remained more silent or less discussed is that one of the biggest obstacles for the career aspirations of women is the lack of career obstacles for men who are incompetent. In a way, the fact that we don't seem to care that much about competence or as much about competence as we think. And, you know, it's important to understand that this isn't a man versus woman fight or battle, but rather what I'm trying to emphasize is that a lot of the traits that make people more effective as leaders are more feminine than masculine. And historically, we looked at them and saw them as a sign of weakness. But after decades of selecting too much for hyper-masculinity, for being overconfident, abrasive, and maybe even a little bit narcissistic, there is now more need than ever for leaders who can display empathy, emotional intelligence, people skills, humility, and integrity. And if you select on these traits, you'll end up with not just more women in leadership, but slightly more women than men in leadership. That's why I think the best gender diversity intervention is to have no gender diversity intervention at all and focus on talent rather than gender.
Tomas, in our last couple of minutes, it seems like in business reporting and in popular culture, we have valorized a character type, the tough as nails leader, take no prisoners approach, doesn't worry about people's feelings. Are we getting this message all over the place, and it's going to be hard to break through that?
I don't think it's going to be that hard, because I think there's evidence already that people are witnessing the lack of results or the negative results that this kind of leadership actually brings. So in a way, we can hope that some of it fixes itself, or that the system self-regulates, particularly as organizations who understand that leadership competence is not about being tough, strong, or aggressive, but competent, humble, and honest, will outperform their rivals. I mean, and there's so much data on this. Even Jim Collins's seminal book published almost two decades ago, showing that the difference between very effective CEOs and the rest is that very effective CEOs were not just very hardworking and persistent, but also remarkably humble and low-key. The trouble, of course, is that there aren't any movies about these people. If they were, they were probably more boring than watching, documentaries on many of our current leaders, or, films like The Wolf of Wall Street, which captivate our attention. But to be sure, nobody wants to work for these people or have such leaders in charge.
Tomas, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Tomas Chamorro Premusic, Chief Talent Scientist at Manpower Group, Professor of Business Psychology at University College London and Columbia University. His new book is called Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders and How to Fix It? Still time for you to share your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.